Welcome everyone to the March session of, as our 17th season of the Denver Community College Torah for Tycoon program rolls on, despite COVID rolling on as well, although hopefully it's starting to roll back, God willing. Thank you to the Harry H. Barron Trust and Rabbi Zev Barron for its continuous sponsorship of Torah for Tycoons as we continue our 17th season. You heard that already. The College's 23rd anniversary celebration is 1 week from tonight, next Wednesday, March 10th, 7 p.m. It will be on Zoom. Do not try this link. It's going to be a different link. So we hope that you will all be able to join us. And this event, the event itself is online, is free for everyone to attend. But of course, this is our largest public annual fundraising event. So anything that anyone is able to contribute towards the event is greatly appreciated to enable us to continue our great work here in Denver. But like I said, you are welcome to join the event regardless. Okay, and if you would like to sign up or reserve, you can go to denvercol.org, and you can sign up over there. You can also email. You should be able to see over there the flyer for our event, the journey. It's going to be a great event with some very unique features. And you can go to denvercol.org or email reservations@denvercol.org. Then, in addition, I also want to encourage everyone who's here to think about having a conversation with the call about our Live on Life and Legacy program, which is organized here by Rose Community Foundation. And that is helping the call and many other local Denver Jewish organizations create future financial stability through planned giving, such as wills, endowments, estate planning. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce our presenters this evening. Andy Clark, thank you so much for making time and being here. CPA, PRS, CFP, he's a partner advisor at MZ Clark & Associates. And he is also a partner for Israel Investment Advisors. And yours truly, Rabbi Mordechai Fleischer, and I am the senior educator for the Denver Community Kollel. So Andy, over to you.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for being here. I guess, by way of, maybe not show of hands, I was just going to give a quick overview of what happened. I think most people have heard about the GameStop and AMC and some other short squeezes that were put on maybe at the end, I think it's like late January. Just kind of go through really quickly at a very high level, simplistic level as to what happened. And really what we want to get in, and there's lots of different tangents we go off on, but really get into kind of the ethics of what happened and is it allowed or not and so on and so forth. But just to summarize for those of you who don't know, what was happening was this, is that there was there were several hedge funds out there, Melvin Capital being one of them in particular, that was a short, for those of you who don't know shorting, does everybody know what shorting a stock is?
I do now.
Now everybody does.
Not
okay.
Really.
Not really. Well, okay.
You say it's going to go down. You're betting more that it's the stock is going to go down in value rather than up.
Right. Let me give you a very simplistic explanation. If you think about when you put money in a bank, right, you go and you make a deposit and you put $100,000 in your bank account. The bank actually takes that money and will loan it out, right? That's how the bank makes money. The bank will take that money and they'll loan it to somebody else and charge them interest. And they'll promise to give you your cash if you want it, but that's what they're going to do with their money. So people will hold, oftentimes will hold securities or stocks in what's called street name. So years ago, you would get a stock. If you bought a stock at Disney, you get a piece of paper to have your name on. So you got one share of Disney and you keep it in your house. And then if you got a dividend, it would come to your house. Most people keep their stocks at a brokerage firm in street name so that if they want to sell it or, you know, conduct business with it, trade it, it's done quickly. So just like a bank that has a vault with your cash in it that they go and they kind of loan out. When you short a stock, if you're a customer of, say, Morgan Stanley, and you want to short Apple, what you do is you borrow somebody else's Apple from the vault in Morgan Stanley. You take that, you know, you put a little IOU in there, but you take that stock and you go and you sell it. Now, but you've got to replace it with another share of Apple. You sell it hoping that the price goes down. And when the price goes down, you buy it back at a cheaper price than what you sold it for, put the stock back in the vault, and you make that difference between what you sold it for and what you had to buy it back for. That's shorting a stock. Does that make sense? Whoever asked the question? Okay. So what happened here is there was, I'll give you another term called the float, which is the percentage of shares outstanding of a company. And what ended up happening was there was more, it's not allowed, but it happened, call it naked shorts or whatever, but there was more stock of GameStop being shorted by people who were assuming that the price would go down than there existed even in stock. Right. And so the naked short, which is really what happened, it's illegal. It got kicked out. You weren't able to do it after the 2008-2009 financial crisis. But the technical definition of it is, you know, is selling shares that cannot affirmatively be determined to exist. So there was more. So if there was 50 million shares of GameStop, I don't remember the flow, but if there was 50 million shares of GameStop out there, there was more than 50 million being sold. So the people on Reddit, it's called Wall Street Bets on Reddit, kind of saw this and said, hey, there's more stuff out there being sold that even exists. That means people are going to have to buy this stock back to cover. So via group chat or social media or whatever, they got together and said, let's force the price of GameStop up. Let's start buying it, which will force these big hedge funds who are shorting the stock to cover, because when you go and you borrow a stock from a Morgan Stanley, whatever, you have unlimited losses. When you own a stock long, you have limited losses. You only can lose what you paid for it. When you short a stock, you have unlimited losses because the stock could theoretically go, you know, infinitely high, and you're responsible for that. So at some point when your loss gets so big, the brokerage firm that you borrowed the stock from will come in and say, you need to replace that stock now, or else we're going to sell your other collateral and buy the stock back and replace it. So what was happening is these traders on Reddit, or, you know, well, Reddit was the social media communication, were all buying up the stock, which forced kind of capital calls or margin calls or whatever you want to call it, or short squeeze is actually what it's technically called, where these hedge funds who had shorted the stock must now come in and pay exorbitant prices for the stock that they shorted. That's what happened in a nutshell. So the whole question comes about, I mean, there's, and then it gets, you know, get all these different tangents is Robinhood, which is a platform, a trading platform that a lot of, you know, small investors use to buy and sell stock. We're allowing people to sell shares of GameStop, but we're limiting the amount of shares they can purchase. And they claimed, well, it was because, you know, various reasons, but that got into a whole ethical question. And then there's lots of complications with who their customers were, Citadel and so on and so forth. So lots of stuff, but I don't want going off all the tangents. I want to stick to the thesis. Is it fair? Is it right to a share? Now it's illegal, but is it, you know, to be a participant in this action that forces the stock price up to basically damage or hurt the hedge funds that had shorted the stock? And that's, you know, is that market manipulation? Is it not? And lots of questions around that. So that was kind of the story behind it. As a sidebar, just a couple comments. I don't believe GameStop actually really was able to profit that much from it. AMC, an interesting story. Well, I'll come to the AMC story later, but that's the gist. I want to stop there, turn it over to Rabbi Fleischer, and just let's talk about the ethics surrounding this.
Okay.
I could talk all about it all night, but let's talk about it.
I will say, thank you very much, Andy. I had a number of conversations with Andy about this because my understanding of the stock market is fairly limited to what I learned in the 12th grade economics. And that was a long time ago. But in discussing with Andy, I did certainly understand that there, like you say, a lot of tangents you could go off on in terms of the different ethical issues that both ethical and halachic, you know, from a halachic standpoint, legal issues, which could come up over here. So let me just share my screen over here with everyone. Give me one moment so that you can see my sources. Just give me a sec.
Andy,
Yes.
Isn't it that they are creating a false high because the company wasn't of quality to reach as high as when they rebought the stock? It's a false high.
Correct. They intentionally inflated the price because mm-hmm. they knew that the hedge funds or the short sellers, we'll call them hedge funds, but we don't know who they all were. But yes, they did this to force. They knew that there had to be buyers if they forced the price up high enough.
I see. Isn't that what happened with the Great Depression with RCA and some other big companies? Well, they were like Exxon. They gave out phony information of what their companies were doing.
Right.
And little people who were workers started buying the stock, and that they really weren't doing as well as the falsified information was.
I don't think you have to go back to the Great Depression. You can look at the Enron scandal. I think a similar thing.
Yeah, Enron was big time with that.
Stuff like that goes on a regular basis.
And the Rothschilds too.
Yeah. It seemed like everybody was, maybe not everybody, but in large measure, people were following the rules of the game. And everybody, it's Wall Street. And it seemed like what the biggest issue was, the big boys are getting their pants pulled down and the little guys are doing it to them. That seemed to be the whole thing behind it. There may not, there may be some issues about maybe some ethical issues as opposed to legal issues, but it seemed like the bigger issue was that because of the naked shorts that were out there, the big boys were finally getting hurt in ways that they weren't used to.
Right. Well, think about to that point, Dan. The naked shorts selling a stock naked is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's loopholes. Right, there's loopholes and there's ways to do it, whether they were genuine or not. Right. The question is, the other question is you got to ask, and I don't know, and the SEC probably doesn't know yet. But was there market manipulation on Reddit or not? Right, I don't know. I don't think that verdict's decided yet.
Yeah. What if it's a bunch of people actively doing it, just very small people, as opposed to say one or two people? That's a very different with lots of money. It's a very is it yes. quote unquote market manipulation just because you're out there on a Reddit board?
It's a great question. This is something I don't think the SEC has ever faced. It's going to be a lot of issues. It's going to be again, just because you asked it, let's expand it, right? There was comments about relationship between Citadel and Robinhood, and Citadel is Robinhood's market mate, right? Citadel pays, pays order flow money, to Robinhood, right? For Robinhood to place their trades to Citadel, and Citadel has connections and loans to Melvin, and there's a lot of tangents here, and it's not, Dan, to your point, it's not clear. But it's interesting. I mean, but yes, good point. It's not clear.
Okay. Anyone else before I get started? Okay. So I will get started then. And just to point out, when I had spoken with Andy to give this class, I said it's really going to be old news because this happened late January, early February. But I think earlier this week or late last week, GameStop was jumping again. I did not check it today, if it was still jumping around, but I think over the last week, it was shooting up again. So, the story is not over yet. And as you point out, we're still waiting for the SEC, to decide to look into into all of this. And I would guess there will be, as always happens, laws passed or whatever, to protect those, I guess, who want to be protected. So, we'll see from the legal standpoint where things go. There are two things I want to focus on over here. As we said, there are a lot of different directions we can go with this. For example, I'm not going to get into this tonight, but the whole idea of short selling raises a very interesting question about the prohibition of ribis, of interest. Because if I lend you, for example, a pallet of flour, that's the case discussed in the Talmud, of grain, and you pay back that same pallet of grain, not the same one, but you owe me a pallet of grain, and I shouldn't use a pound, a bushel. If I lend you a bushel of wheat, when you pay back, that bushel is worth more now than when I lent it to you. So then you have an issue of paying interest because it is worth more. So if I lend you $10 and you pay me back $10, $10 is $10 is $10. But if I lend you, let's say in America, 10 shekel, which is a variable value in America, if when you give it back to me, it's worth more. If I give you a bushel of wheat and it's worth more when you give it back to me, that is a question of paying interest. By the same token, in this case of short selling, if you are lending me the stock, and then when I give you the stock back, it's worth more, as happened over here, does that pose a problem of ribis of interest? That's just, I'm just giving you one discussion, which we're not getting into. The bottom line seems to be that there are various reasons to be lenient. Again, it's a whole discussion unto itself. Another conversation which could come up over here is the question of one who deliberately manipulates markets for goods. Okay, and that is a serious issue discussed in halacha, where you have a seller deliberately manipulating the prices of goods in a market. And the question would become, does that apply to stocks as well? Or is that limited to, let's say, you know, things like basic goods like flour, eggs, oil, you know, stuff like that. But can one make the argument that to deliberately manipulate prices on a stock market, would that fall into that category as well? That's another discussion, which again, I'm not getting into. I'm just throwing out there some of the different issues which come up. What I do want to focus on over here is whether the issue of both short selling and the short squeeze that was created by this Reddit group, what's the name again?
Wall Street Bets.
Wall Street Bets, thank you, WSB. Wall Street Bets, the ethical side of it. Because what is pretty clear when you are short selling is that you are banking on the stock value going down. That's how you're going to make a profit. So you are hoping that it goes down. Is that okay to basically hope that someone else loses money in order that you can make money? Okay, that's number one. Number two, can you do something, assuming it's legal, to cause the price to drop, thereby causing someone who owns that a loss in order that you should profit? Is that okay? Is that halakhically permissible? From a Torah standpoint, is it ethical? And so those are some questions I want to try to examine as we go along over here. So we start with source number one. And that is a passage in the Talmud. And again, if anyone wants to chime in, or Andy, if you want to discuss more as we go through these sources, please feel free to everyone to chime in. One may open a store next to his fellow store. That's missing an apostrophe there. Sorry. Next to his fellow store. That's better. Or a bathhouse next to his fellow's bathhouse. And he cannot protest against him, for he may reply, "You do in your property and I will do in my property." Now, this is really touching on a much broader discussion of competition and a free market. But on a very basic level, you're allowed to open a store, a business next to someone else's business, even though you are directly competing. And even though you are going to inevitably pull customers away from the first business, the other business cannot say, "Well, you can't do that. You're pulling customers away from me." In general, you cannot do that. You can't say that, because you can say, "You do what you want in your store. I'll do what I want on my property." And that's it. Now, there are limitations on this. When it's in a situation where it's impossible to compete, where someone comes from elsewhere, and let's just say there's a case discussed in the Talmud where you have a dead-end street, so everyone has to come in from one side, and the new business opens up closer to the entrance, so that anyone walking in will go to that business first, and the guy further up the block will not get any customers. There's a discussion over there. There are other cases as well, but on a very basic level, competition on a free market is permissible, even though when I open my business, I am going to pull away customers from you. So right off the bat, the idea that my conducting my business, my ability to earn a living, even though it's at your expense, because I'm not going on into your property, I'm not going into your store and smashing things. I'm not standing in front of your store and calling out that this stuff is garbage. I can do what I want in my property and run my business, even though it will impinge on your success, okay? And that being the case, it would seem to be fairly straightforward, at least based on this source, that you are allowed to short sell, even though you are hoping that the other price will go down. For sure that's permitted, because you're not doing anything directly to cause it to go down. You're just banking that it will go down. And so therefore that would not be an issue at all. Okay. And source number two, one who builds in his own property, that his property will appreciate in value. And he is not directly damaging his fellow's possessions, but rather causes it to depreciate. In such a case, the sages do not require one to distance himself. So this is a second case where it's a little more direct damage. I'm not opening a store, competing with you and pulling away customers, but rather I'm putting up, let's say, a building on my property that will cause your home to depreciate. For example, anyone who's been to West Denver lately knows that every day you open up and walk outside and there's another construction project somewhere in the neighborhood that has started. So there are some houses that were built on one of the blocks over here, and they are, I think, 2 or 3 story homes, and they have windows which look out over the older ranch style homes in the neighborhood. Well, guess what? One of the lots right next door to one of those new homes with the windows that looked out on a great view of Colfax Avenue, that ranch style home got knocked down, and they are putting up a 3-story building. Surprise, surprise. On that corner lot, cramming in as many as they possibly can. I'm probably insulting someone by saying that. And now the person in the older new home, when he looks out his window, is going to see a building that has now just been built over there. So that will cause the property to depreciate. Okay, but in such a case, generally, my new building is not directly damaging your property. It's just going to cause it to depreciate. And in such a case, I don't have to distance myself. So this is like a step further, where I am somewhat directly causing you a loss because my building or what I'm doing in my property will cause your home to drop in value. But because I'm not going and smashing your windows, or I'm not taking away anything you have, any rights or anything like that you have, so that is permitted because that's an indirect cause of loss. Okay? Again, so by the same token over here, if I sell short, so let's just go back over here 2 steps. If I'm short selling and I'm hoping that that the stock will drop in value, that's just my hope. Is it going to be at someone else's expense? Yes. Is there anything wrong with that per se? Certainly not from a halachic standpoint. And even if by me selling those shares short, let's just say I'm selling enough of them to cause the price to drop. Okay. So I am therefore causing your stock that you own to depreciate in order that I can be able to make a few bucks. But I'm not directly damaging it. Just by me selling a lot of them, or a bunch of people selling a whole bunch of them, I'm causing the stock to depreciate in value and causing you a loss indirectly. That would seem to be included in this source of the rush. Rabbi Usher of Germany, lived in 13th century Germany, later fled to Spain. And seemingly that would not be a problem. So long as I'm not directly doing anything to your property, or I'm not taking away a right that you have in your property, such as, for example, going back to my aforementioned case, there may be an issue with me blocking your windows, because until now you had the right to look out your window. Now you don't. But if I'm just causing the value of your home to drop, I'm not taking away a right that you had in your home. I'm just making the value drop. That is not a problem. Okay. And therefore, it could be argued that over here as well, there's no issue with selling a lot of shares in the hope that the price will drop, even though it will drop because it's an indirect cause of the depreciation and nothing more than that. And that would not be a problem from a halachic standpoint. Okay. To take this idea a step further, source number 3, this is in the context of normal, what's valid in terms of competition in a free market. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda says a storekeeper may not distribute roasted grain and walnuts to children. This is, by the way, the ancient equivalent of dum-dums. You're not allowed to distribute roasted grain and walnuts to children, for he accustoms them to come to his store. So Rabbi Yehuda says that a storekeeper is not allowed to give out incentives to customers to come to his store. But the sages say, this is how we rule, that he is remembered for good. In other words, this storekeeper is doing a good thing. What's the reasoning of the sages? For he, the storekeeper, can say to his competitors, I distribute walnuts, you can distribute plums. In other words, what the sages are expressing over here is that even though the storekeeper seeks to gain an advantage in his business by giving out candy to the kids who are coming, okay, and this would be true for any incentive that you give a customer who's coming to your store, that you're allowed to do that. because the other storekeeper can do the same thing. So as long as the other storekeeper can do the same thing, it is permitted for once the storekeeper A to provide an incentive to come or engage in some other practice. Just to give an example, in modern day supermarkets, you have loss leaders, right, where the store will drop the price quite a bit on a particular item to pull customers into the store. And then once you're in there, they're assuming you'll buy other stuff. Why is that permitted? Other stores can't really compete with that price. The answer is they can make loss leaders also. Okay, they're able to enact loss leaders as well. And because they are able to compete, that will be permitted. The question becomes on this particular item, where do you draw the line of other stores can do the same thing? Okay, for example, if I'm Amazon, don't I wish? If I'm Amazon or if I'm Walmart and I am a huge, enormous, gigantic corporation with, in the case of Walmart, hundreds and hundreds of stores worldwide with huge buying power so that I can force sellers, I can force the wholesalers to do my bidding in terms of pricing and so on, and the smaller stores cannot compete. So is that included in this source? Well, you mom and pop store can do the same thing. No, we can't. We can't force Tupperware, which I think was a story that happened some years ago with Walmart and Tupperware. They told Tupperware, either you sell us the price we want or we're not going to buy from you. Okay? The mom and pop stores can't do that, so they can't compete. So does that become now problematic from a halakhic standpoint? Because you can't say that it's possible for them to compete anymore. Or the flip side, you say, well, there are a few stores that have made it. Target has managed. Costco has managed. There are stores that have figured out how to compete with Walmart. Amazon competes with Walmart, so it's doable. Or do you say, well, yeah, it's very nice. You've got 4, 5, 6, companies that can compete, but by and large, most people can't compete. Where do you draw that line is very unclear. Okay, and extending it to our discussion over here, when you have a short selling situation and you have these huge hedge funds that can short sell very large amounts of stock and thereby cause the price to drop just by dint of the fact that they're selling, that they're short selling so many shares. Okay, is that well? Everyone else is able to do it as well, and therefore it's fine. Okay, or do you say no because others cannot do the same? And therefore, they won't be able to compete. They won't be able to keep up. And everyone else is going to lose out because you have this huge company engaging in a practice that it can get away with and afford it or manage to do it, but others cannot. Do you cross the line over there from fair market to unfair advantage where others cannot compete, are unable to do the same thing? Okay. So that's, I think, a question which, is not something I can answer, but I think it's a question of, where do you draw the line of saying, well, you can do the same thing? Can I? If I'm the small time investor on Reddit, and I can't short sell that many shares and thus cause the price to drop or engage in that kind of volume of naked shorts because I'm the little guy, as Dan pointed out, I'm the little guy who's going to get messed over because I'm not big enough to do that. Does that create unfair competition? It's not really competition, but an unfair environment in the market, which, according to this, maybe the sages would agree to Rabbi Yehuda that is an unfair advantage and you can't engage in that. So again, it's not a clear answer where you draw that line, but the idea, the problem is out there. And certainly from an ethical standpoint, certainly it's a concern once you cross over from, yes, this is something anyone can do, to no, this is not something anyone can do. Only the real big players in the market can engage in this kind of practice and make money, and everyone else is going to be left behind and actually end up losing because of it. That is a real ethical question and perhaps even a legal question from a halachic standpoint. Okay. Any questions before I go on? Okay. So I will move on there. So that brings us to source number 4. And again, some of these sources are just echoing these different ideas.
Say.
Yeah.
Rabbi, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
So what you're saying is that one individual selling short in a marketplace is perfectly legal. It's when a group gets together and screws up the market, then the halacha situation becomes questionable.
I wouldn't even say a group. I would say when you have a huge, when you have, and again, maybe,
or a lot
maybe
of money.
My, Maybe my understanding is off, which is very possible, of the market realities. But if I'm understanding correctly, when you have, you know, very large investors, hedge funds and things like that, so they are engaging in practices which they are able to engage in because of their size, like selling huge amounts of shares, short selling huge amounts, which because they're selling so many drives the price down. Okay. But a small investor is not going to be able to short sell that many shares to drive the price down. So is that an unfair advantage that a very large, let's say, hedge fund is engaging in? Does that cross the line between anyone can do it to no, not anyone can do it, and therefore you can't engage in it? All right. You got muted again. So if you want to talk, you got to unmute again.
All right. So basically what I said was the individual shorting a stock when he sees the possibility of a stock falling is perfectly within halacha.
I believe so. Yeah. Based on this, it seems like that.
Okay.
That's it. You can sleep well tonight.
Much, Rabbi, because that's exactly how I feel about it.
Yeah, so that's the point, because like we said, you know, you're not directly damaging anyone. Yes, you are hoping the price will drop, but that's fine. Okay. You could discuss if you are, you know, if you want to be a very pious individual, it's not really the greatest way to make a living by hoping someone else makes a loss. There is such an idea from a Musar, you know, high ethical standpoint, but from a baseline, you know, from a basic ethical standpoint, and certainly from a halachic legal standpoint, I don't see any real issue with it, and I've not seen really, you know, any real claim against it from from halachic sources. Okay.
Okay. Wait a second.
Okay. So that brings us to source number four. He may also lower the price below market in order that customers buy from him and other merchants cannot block. And this is the idea I mentioned a few minutes ago, that you are allowed to sell products at a reduced rate. Okay. Again, because even though one can argue, but you're undercutting everyone else in the market. But again, because everyone else can do it, it's not problematic. It goes back to source number three, where the sages say, I give out walnuts, you can give out plums. In other words, you can engage in the same practice. So when you lower the market price on an item, others can do the same, and therefore they cannot block him. However, as I mentioned before, where do you cross that line from fair to unfair? In source number five, there is a line here from the Rama. Rama, Rabbi Moshe Israelis, the great 16th century Polish halachic authority. And he said, if one wishes to lower interest rates when lending with interest to non-Jews, his fellow, meaning another competitor, cannot protest. If you want to lend at a lower interest rate than others and get more customers that way, you are allowed to do that. That is what the Rama says. The question is, how low can you drop interest rates? Which brings us to source number six. The Rama writes in his responses explicitly that to sell for much cheaper, all agree that this is forbidden. Okay. Yes, it's true that the Rama there, meaning in Choshen Mishpat, omitted the words a little lower and only wrote that it's permitted to lend at a lower rate, but his words in the response in the test that it's a printer's error. So this is coming from the response of the Divrei Chaim, Rabbi Chaim Halberstam, better known as Rabbi Chaim Sander, who was a great Hasidic leader, but also a very, very great halachic authority of the 1800s. And he is saying that the Rama, the very same Rama, who says you can drop rates in order to gain an advantage in the lending market, he says that you cannot drop rates so precipitously, okay, that it's an extreme drop. And in his response, in the Rama writes, you can make the rates a little lower. In other words, you can drop it a little bit, a reasonable amount, so that others can compete. That's standard free market practice. Supply and demand, the price goes up, price goes down. If you drop the price, then the others will have to follow suit. Okay? But he says a little lower, says the Divrei Chaim, if you make it a lot lower, if you're going to drop the lending rate to such a degree that no one else is able to compete, okay, then it is a problem. That becomes a problem. This is really the idea I mentioned before, that there's a line drawn. It's not a clear line, but there is a line between fair competition, fair trying, a fair practice of trying to get an advantage over unfair. Okay. And where you cross that line, that is a question. I will just tell you very interestingly what the Rama is dealing with over here, in this responsum. There was a rabbi in Poland who had published a set of Maimonides' work on halacha, known as the Yarech HaZakah. He had invested money and he had printed an edition of the Rambam's great halachic work. And there was a non-Jewish fellow who apparently got into a fight with this rabbi. And in order to get back at him, he went ahead and printed a very similar edition of the Rambam, of Maimonides' work, and deliberately sold it at a very cheap price in order to undercut. Okay, just, you know, this non-Jewish fellow was a wealthy individual, and he just went ahead and published this work and sold it at a ridiculously cheap price just to stick it to this rabbi and to undercut him in order to cause him a loss. And the Rama was writing whether Jews in Poland are allowed to buy this set of Rambam from this non-Jewish printer who's selling it at an impossibly low price, and he's undercutting, and he basically says that you're allowed to drop the price a little, but to drop the price to such a degree where it's impossible to compete, it's an unreasonable price, that is problematic. Okay? And that is, you know, again, where that issue comes in of where do you draw that line? Okay? And in fact, that is ruled as well by the Aruch HaShulchan, source number 7, to significantly lower prices in the sale of merchandise is completely forbidden, and through this, the normal way of business will be ruined, and he will cause the loss of others' money. This, to me, is a very, very telling source, because the Aruch HaShulchan, who was Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, very great 19th century Polish or Lithuanian, I should say, authority. He was a rabbi in the city of Nevarduk, and he said that what happens is when you have a merchant significantly undercutting the prices, you are going to destroy the entire process of business, which is kind of what happened in the stock market during this whole GameStop situation, is that the whole market went into chaos because, as Marsha pointed out before, this price that GameStop was selling at was completely artificial. It was not based on reality whatsoever. People were just buying in what essentially became a gigantic game of, I don't know if you want to call it chicken or something like that, as Andy pointed out, that it was just, at what point is everyone going to say, okay, we better sell now and keep our profits, and then the whole thing just collapsed, which happened eventually. And it's just not worth it. The whole thing was artificial. And what happened in this situation was it threw the entire market into chaos. So regular short selling, that's within the context and within the norms of the market, that's how the market functions. But when you had a situation like occurred with GameStop, where you had people artificially driving the prices up for whatever reason they did that for, and we'll get to that in a minute, becomes problematic because you are destroying the ability of the marketplace to function. And that's an issue as well. So to just sell short, even though you'll force the price down, that's how the market functions. That's part of normal business, or at least as long as one can argue that. In the case of the whole GameStop frenzy, what's happening over here is that these people, by doing what they're doing, are essentially ruining the ability of the market to function normally. And that seems to be included in what the Aruch HaShulchan over here is saying, that when you undercut other businesses to such a degree, besides the issue of undercutting and the unfair competition, there's also the issue that you are blocking the ability of normal commerce. And that's a problem. Okay, so that is something to consider as well. Okay, and that brings us to source number 8. Source number 8 is very fascinating because here we really get into what was motivating the people on Reddit, on this Wall Street Bets group. What was motivating them to engage in this whole thing? So if you tell me they wanted to make money, okay, so then we discussed before, you're allowed to make money even though it's going to cost someone else money. So in the case of this WSB group, this was what's called the short squeeze. When they created this short squeeze, there's no question that they caused enormous losses to some hedge funds. Andy, you'll have to, I think I saw some estimates maybe in the, certainly in the millions, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars. maybe even I think some, was that?
I think it was like $10 billion for Melvin Capital.
$10 billion.
Yeah,
for Melvin. That's a lot of money. Okay, so they're causing these losses. What's their motivation? So if you say, well, listen, everyone's buying it, it's jumping, you know, thousands of percentage points beyond what it was worth a month or two ago. You know, it's just skyrocketing, and I can make a lot of money in a very short time, and just pray to God that it doesn't crash while I'm still in there. So I'm trying to make money. So then that's included in our source earlier, that you're allowed to go and conduct business, as we said back here, right at the beginning. You do in your property, I will do in my property. It's my business, it's not your business. You conduct your business, I'll conduct my business. What I think over here is more of an issue is this source over here. And that is that if you are lowering the price in a free market, going back to the case of two merchants competing with each other, if merchant A is lowering the price, not to attract customers, but because he wants to damage the other business, that's his goal. He wants to knock the other business out. That's his goal. He wants to cause damage to the other business. So then we invoke something called Midas Sodom. Midas Sodom is usually invoked when you have a situation where I want to do something and you technically have the right to block me, but there's no loss whatsoever to you if I engage in this practice. Okay? Midas Sodom means the people of Sodom were just cheap and mean and self-centered and narcissistic just because they wanted to be. They would have suffered no loss. They didn't allow guests in their city just because they don't want anyone else coming into their city. That's it. Not because they would suffer a loss per se. They just reached a point in their society and their culture where anyone else getting anything, in Yiddish, the word is fargin. I can't fargin you to have this. Okay? I know it just bothers me that you should have something. Okay? Even if I suffer no loss. That is classic Midas Sodom. Okay? So the Talmud talks about a number of cases where Mr. A wants to do something and Mr. B has the ability, according technically, to block him from doing it, but it will not cost him anything. It will not cause him any harm and so on. We tell Mr. B, you cannot block Mr. A from doing this because that's Midas Sodom. And we force you, you cannot engage in that kind of culture, in that kind of practice. When we talk about a case where I am going to engage in a practice for the express purpose of causing damage to you, even if I have some profit to make, but that's not my motive. I'm not doing it for financial gain. I'm doing it because I want to stick it to you. I want to cause you damage. That, in that case, we can stop you from engaging in that practice. So the question becomes over here, in the case of the GameStop frenzy, there's little question that a very major part of that whole operation was to stick it, as Dan pointed out, was to stick it to the big guys on Wall Street, whom the little guys feel are always getting an unfair advantage. Okay, I think that was certainly a major part of what was going on over here. And there was all sorts of pictures of people buying out billboards and planes flying through the sky with messages on the back, basically, you know, advertising, ha, 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 we got you this time. You know, we won, you lost for once. You know, and just, you know, really sticking it to the big players. Now, whether you like the big players or not, the idea that I'm engaging in a particular practice just to cause you a loss is problematic. It's problematic, certainly from an ethical standpoint, and to some degree even, as we see over here, from a halachic standpoint, that if your sole motive is to cause me a loss, then I can force you over me to Sodom. Now, from an ethical standpoint, I think there's little question that to have that intent and to engage in this practice for that purpose is problematic. But in the case of the whole GameStop frenzy, when you have people buying buying up huge amounts of, you know, buying up GameStop at ridiculously inflated prices, it's hard for me to say that it's only Midas Sodom, because there's no question that people are in this as well to make money. A lot of people made a lot of money on this. There are people who made millions and millions of dollars on this GameStop thing because they sold on time. They didn't lose their money. And they were willing to take the gamble. So I would imagine that people who are buying in were not buying in and saying, I'm going to buy in just to stick it to the big hedge fund guys. But rather, I think they were doing it because they wanted to make money and at the same time, stick it to the big players as well. And so therefore, I don't know. And I would think personally that you're going to have a hard time convincing me that in this case, it's Midas Sodom where there was money to be made. Okay, but that said, I'll just quickly go through the last two sources and then hand it back to Andy for the other tangents that you wanted to talk about. Source number 9, you shall not bear a grudge and you shall not take revenge. This is a prohibition in the Torah. So if, again, the idea of the motivation of wanting to get back at the big guys and to turn the tables on them and give them a taste of their own medicine may very well be included in the prohibition of don't take revenge. Again, if you're buying the stock because you want to make money, that's one thing. But if you're motivated to some degree by your desire to get back at all the big guys, so then it's very possible you're crossing that line into the prohibition of bearing a grudge and taking revenge. And lastly, I want to get to source number 10. And this is a fascinating verse in Psalms that says, with the pure, you act purely, with the crooked, you are wily. Now, this is King David talking about God. But the Talmud invokes this verse about Jacob. When Yaakov, the third of the patriarchs, went to Laban's house, his uncle and soon-to-be father-in-law, okay, when he arrived there, Rachel, whom he wanted to marry, told him, you better be careful because my father is a swindler. And Yaakov said, if he wants to deal straight, I will deal straight. But if he wants to play games, Yaakov said, I can play games just as well as he can. Okay. And the sources say, what do you mean? Yaakov, who's known as the most honest, his overarching trait is honesty, is going to engage in deceit. And the answer is there's two kinds of deceit. There's deceit where I cross the line and I do something illegal or improper. And then there's deceit where if you're going to act deceitfully with me, I have no choice but to engage in some degree of, we'll call deceitful, or in this case, wily practice to protect myself from you. And so if I'm not stealing, breaking any laws, if I'm not doing anything wrong on a technical level, I am allowed to deal with some degree of wiliness in order to protect myself and my need to exist, as long as I don't cross that line. And on the contrary, the commentators say that Jacob's honesty was that he was able to engage Laban for 20 years. Okay? 20 years he lived with him, and he was able to engage him. And he was able to go blow for blow with Laban, but he did not stoop to Laban's level of outright theft, of outright lying. Jacob was able to live with him and deal with him and engage in wiliness without crossing the line into illicit behavior. That's no small feat. It's very easy to be honest when you're living in an honest world. When you're in the study hall all day, it's very easy to be honest. When you go out into a dog eats dog world and you have no choice but to engage in some degree of wiliness and you're able to nonetheless not cross that line into illicit behavior, but just engage in enough wiliness to keep yourself functioning and to protect yourself, that is indeed a very enormous feat. So I think over here, one can invoke this idea in the context of the whole GameStop frenzy that these small investors basically beat these big hedge fund investors at their own game. That's what it seems like. And correct me if I'm wrong, but they basically beat them at their own game. These big hedge fund investors, these big players, are able to gain an advantage because of their size, as we discussed earlier. And there may or may not be ethical and perhaps even legal issues with that. But when these guys came and said, we're going to stand up for ourselves and we're going to protect ourselves and we're going to also be able to make some money on the market and not cross the line into illegal behavior, I think that there's nothing wrong with that, just from that standpoint alone. Now, to lord it over them and say, ha ha, we got you this time, and so on, that may cross the line into revenge. You may cross the line into Midas Sodom, where you want to arm someone else. That should be avoided. I understand good and well the emotional push to go that route. Okay. But in terms of beating a competitor at his own game without crossing the line into illicit behavior, not only is there nothing wrong with it, I would say that on the contrary, it's appropriate because that's how the market works. If the market is a dog eat dog market, you're allowed to stand up for yourself and protect yourself and make money also, even if it's going to cost someone else money, certainly if that person is engaging in similar behavior and costing you money. So that is my 2 cents on this discussion. And Andy, you wanted to talk about some of the other stuff that was going on.
Well, just a question or add on to your point 9, I guess, point 9, 10. you know, you made the comment earlier about most of these investors were in it to make money. I would take issue with, I mean, if you're looking at the postings, you know, the comment, diamond hands, which, you know, the push to diamond hands means to not sell, to stay, you know, stay strong, don't sell. It had nothing to do with making money. It had to do with punishing the big guys. So,
yeah. Okay. So that I would agree that would fall into the, you know, under the sources eight and nine of, you know, right. What you call Midas Sodom, trying to cause someone else a loss deliberately, even if you could argue that they have it coming to them, right. You know, deliberately try to damage someone else, and certainly to take revenge is not, yeah, that kind of behavior would not be appropriate.
So I guess, yeah, go ahead, Dan.
What about this? I mean, a lot of these people, especially a lot of the guys that were on Robin Hood and you know, some of the smaller people, they kind of, you know, I get this, they knew exactly what was going on. They may not have had a grudge that they were bearing or taking revenge, but they knew exactly what was going on, and they sort of piggybacked on top of a lot of people and said, you know what, I see this as an opportunity to make money. I'll let the other guys get their hands dirty, and I'll just ride it myself. What would the halakha have to say about that? Are you, because that seems like a pretty gray area as well.
Right. So you are kind of bringing up the question of where someone else engaged in illicit behavior and now they've done it. Can I now profit from their illicit behavior? So I think that, again, it's a nuanced question. I'm sure there are, you know, people out there from a Jewish, you know, ethical standpoint who would say, why don't get involved in any sort of activity that, you know, has people behaving inappropriately. And in fact, the Talmud in a general sense talks about staying away from engaging in a livelihood where, like you said, you'll have to get your hands dirty or you will be tempted by it, or it's just, you know, there's funny stuff going on, even if you're not the one doing it. All right. But that's, again, from a more ethical standpoint, that you want to avoid that. Where you draw that line between, can I make money off of this once others have kind of created this environment? So if they haven't done anything wrong from a legal standpoint, even if they engage in ethically questionable behavior, the ethically questionable behavior, I don't think directly affects your ability to piggyback on it. If they stole money and you want to make money off of that, that's a problem, because that's illicit. That's outright illegal behavior according to halacha. If they just did it, you know, to stick it to take revenge and so on, but the reality is now this environment and this market exists and it's created legally, then from a halachic standpoint, certainly I don't think there's an issue. From an ethical standpoint, that depends on, you know, the person. A person who is very ethically refined would likely stay away from that kind of thing. I'll give you a very
Go ahead. This seems like one of those areas where the phrase "put a fence around the Torah" should be taken seriously.
That's a fair point. So the idea of put a fence around the Torah, there are two basic categories. One is where the sages of the Mishnah, of the Talmud, and so on, they enacted fences that they felt were necessary. And then, as you point out, you have on a more personalized individual level, a person has to know himself or herself, where are my vices, and put fences around that to avoid falling into traps, right? So if a person, just as an example, you know, knows that they have a weakness for alcohol, I'll just take one drink is not a good idea, right? So it's, you know, that kind of thing, it depends on the person. So I think that's true. If you have a person who knows that they can easily be sucked into this kind of stuff, or it will affect them negatively, so then you're right. From an ethical standpoint, there's certainly room to say, you should just steer clear of the whole thing. Let's just say it's me, okay? And I have nothing to do with the stock market, and I just, you know, think this is a good opportunity to make a few bucks. And I'm not saying it is or it's not. There was actually some discussion in my family chat group. One of my siblings said, I think I'm going to buy GameStop today. And the other sibling said, no, don't do that. And, you know, he was kind of kidding around because, you know, it is a gamble. It's exactly what it became. That's not called market investing. That's called gambling. You don't know when the whole thing is going to come tumbling down. You know, so in terms of where you draw that ethical line for someone who really is not involved in this kind of shtick on a normal basis, and just here this opportunity comes up and he can make some money off of it, is there anything wrong with that? Not necessarily. I'll give you another example where this comes up. There's this website called Band's Deal. Some of you may have heard of it. It's an Orthodox Jewish fellow out of Cleveland who basically finds great deals on the internet or anywhere, and he posts them to this site called Band's Deals. And let's say a company makes an error. For example, at one point, El Al, a few years ago, made some sort of mistake where you could get tickets to Israel for ridiculously cheap amounts of money, like a few hundred dollars. Right now, you can't get any tickets to Israel. But, at that time, and he posted it. And people flocked to the website, as you can imagine. And El Al quickly realized something was amiss and took it down. Is there anything wrong with me going to El Al's site, knowing they made a mistake, and buying that ticket? That's a very subtle ethical question. Okay? And there's no right or wrong answer to that, because some people will say, you know, it's wrong to take advantage of their error. Others will say, that's business. You mess up, it's there, it's legal, it's valid. What's wrong with buying a ticket at that price? So these kinds of questions really depends on the person, where that person is holding in their personal ethical level of refinement, and whether, like you said, if that person has a penchant for getting stuck in this stuff, should he put a fence for his own personal safety from an ethical standpoint? Yeah, Jared, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, I got a couple of questions. Because we covered one side of this, which is selling something for a lower price. But we didn't cover the flip side of that, which is selling something for more than it's worth. And as I recall, there are some halacha concerning how much you can mark something up retail.
Correct.
But then I want to also ask about what is the rule with respect to gouging? Every time there's a hurricane, you hear the stories about somebody shows up with a truck full of generators or
hand sanitizer during the pandemic.
What, right. Is the market the market? Is there a halacha on, these sorts of emergency situations?
Okay. Right. So that is a very good question. And really that needs a whole conversation, a whole class unto itself. Yeah. In terms of gouging, it's pretty clear from the Talmud that it's not really appropriate to deliberately jack prices through the roof just because you can. And like you said, you're not allowed to deliberately overcharge. However, I don't think that kind of idea applies to a stock market where the prices that things are going for are generally based on how the market's valuing them. In other words, it's not like you could say, you know, eggs are worth this much. On the contrary, the market is determining.
We know that nobody's actually valuing GameStop
right.
at billions of dollars.
Everyone knows that also.
It's headed for bankruptcy. It's a goner. It's a dog. But there happens to be in this moment
right.
a shortage of the stock.
Right. But that is the market value right now.
And, you know, hypothetically, let's say I'm this guy who happened to own GameStop in my account. And I turn on the computer one morning and oh my goodness, it was $1 yesterday and now it's $900. And I know that it was supposed to go bankrupt and I should have sold it a while ago. I just never got around to it. If I sell my shares at $900 a share, knowing that that is not the true value of GameStop stock, it's just a consequence of this shortage that exists artificially for the moment. Mm-hmm. Am I engaging in gouging? Am I allowed to realize that profit?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not 100% sure.
You got willing buyers though. You have willing buyers and sellers in that particular moment who don't have to buy or sell.
Right.
The gouging argument is more of, I need a snow shovel or I need the hand sanitizer right now for life reasons.
Well, you have the hedge fund. You have the hedge fund saying, I must buy the stock. I've got a margin call. I have to replace the stock.
Right.
Yeah, but they put themselves in that position from the previous investment. Not because hurricane though. Showed up. Yeah.
I could make the same argument though about, you know, so I grew up in Miami, Florida, and after Hurricane Andrew in 1992, people showed up with generators and whatnot, and they wanted $1,000 for a generator or whatever it is. And all the people in my neighborhood were reasonably well-to-do, and none of us needed a generator, but a lot of us wanted a generator. And
But on the other hand, nobody would have shown up with generators at a high price in the first place, because the people needed generators. If they were at a regular price, no generators are going to show up, because they're going to be selling them different parts of the country.
Yeah, it's both of you are making fair points. I'm not sure, just from a, you know, off the top of my head, from a halachic standpoint, whether the two things are analogous or not. Because Jared's making a good point that they are somewhat analogous. Dan's making the point that they're not exactly analogous. There are differences you can make. And then the question would become, just in general, is there any such thing as gouging on a stock market, period? The nature of the stock market is that prices go up and down, not always based on the reality of what it's actually worth, but based on perception of what it's worth at any given moment, right? So it's not like I'm buying a dozen eggs, or in the case of a generator, where it has a normal market value, which suddenly shot through the roof because there's been a hurricane, or, you know, a lot of chickens died because of avian flu or whatever. And now there's I can just get away with gouging it, where the nature of the market is not usually that it can jump like that, except for, like you say, the emergency situation. I can make the argument that the stock market, by definition, cannot have gouging, because the nature of the stock market is it sells at whatever value it sells. That's how people are valuing it right now, even if that value is totally artificial. But right now, that happens to be the value on the market. So I think there is a distinction that can be made, but I certainly cannot tell you authoritatively that that is the case. But I have not heard that. I have not seen or heard anywhere, you know, in my research, that anyone said, you know, if a stock is artificially high, you shouldn't sell it because you're gouging. So my guess is it's not a problem, just based on my lack of seeing any problem with it in terms of the sources I've seen. But I can't say it, authoritatively. Okay?
Thank you, Rabbi Fleischer, for this.
Thank you, Andy, very much. Thank you all for coming.
I think I would just say one thing I would include on this, right? I think the answer is, if you're an individual investor, to Dan's point earlier, right, I think you have to look at yourself. You said this, I'm going to just reiterate in a different word. You have to look at yourself and say, what's my motivation? And if it's to hurt the big guy, that's probably not the thing to do. If it's, I want to jump on and make some money, that's probably okay to do. So.